is the Open University. In a change to our regularly scheduled programming, we now present a specific podcast for those who are taking the early exams on module CS413. 8-bit music, 1982 to 1993.
The following podcast is given a universal rating. Yippee! Podcast.
David Whittaker with the title to Tetris. The same way as I did it last time, to be honest. Well, that little twinkly twinkly music you're hearing at the moment is the high score entry music for the game Burning Rubber. Jonathan Dunham, Matthew Cannon, but yeah. Welcome to Podcast Pilot Episode 4, or the final pilot podcast. After this, I'm going to be taking a short break, see whether it gets popular, gather enough fans, see whether it's feasible, but more importantly, so I can get on with my studies. The third machine I'm going to introduce you to is another 8-bit machine. It was a keyboard with more bits on it, and it plugged to the TV. It was the Amstrad CPC Color personal computer. It was usually considered the third place next to the Sinclair and the Commodore. And sadly, it's my favorite computer. Basically why I'm keeping it until last. Why is it so twinkly, you ask? Well, what you're hearing at the moment is the product of three channels containing only square waves and a logarithmic volume selection, blah blah blah. The General Instruments AY38912 sound chip. These babies were being produced until, what, the early 90s. And, well, as you can hear, they were introduced into the Amstrad, also known as the Arnold, from its introduction in 1985. I think I'll introduce you to another song. Let's play some Ben Dalglish.
Thank you. Lip smacking, motor vein, speaker burst in action. Everybody get down on the floor, cause you know what I'm here for.
Oh, crumbs. That ended quite quickly. Right, let's explain why it was considered the third place machine. Well, it had many more colours than the ZX, and more colours than the Commodore, to be honest, and its resolution was a lot better than the Commodore. Sound was superior to the ZX, what with square waves instead of a dinky buzzer. The Commodore, though, had the SID chip, which was a synthesizer on a piece of silicon, so it beat them both hands down. The Amstrad was a lot easier to program, with Locomotive Basic, a contract between Amstrad and one of the software companies, meant that you could actually program sound and graphics in Basic, no matter how slow it would take. It had a faster tape loading speed, although on the flip side, the Commodore took advantage of its very slow loading by allowing data to be run whilst loading. So you'd have tape loaders, you'd have games, mini games playing. It's a shame. The Amstrad was pricier than the other two systems, especially since you'd have to buy a monitor with it as well. But you could plug it into the TV, as I said earlier on, but you'd have to buy a RF modulator. Yuck. Actually, the CPC was actually the only computer of the three to actually display a component RGB, so you could actually plug it into the SCART socket of your TV, well, if you're European, and you get a lot better picture quality, let me tell you. One good reason is that the system was powered by the Z80 chip, a very popular microcontroller unit. 3 times faster than the Commodore's, but it was the same chip as the Spectrum had. So I'm afraid to say that it was a lot cheaper to just program the Spectrum version and just port it onto the Amstrad, inferior graphics, sound and all. It's really a big shame. If they made the effort, they would have taken advantage of the Amstrad's improved features. But overall, in my opinion, the reason why it was the least popular, it would have been because it was released 2 years after the other two. Consider that being a head start. Anyway, what you just heard a moment ago, it's now a bit silent, was Ben Dugleish's Deflector. Nice little game where you controlled a laser, having to shoot around all parts of the 2D screen area. Anyway, I'll move on and we'll get on to Ghosts and Goblins. Who loves a bit of old 8-bit console action? We'll be right back. Another sudden one again. Oh, okay. Yeah, that wonderful piece from David Whittaker. I'm sure you can hear this and you can recognise what it is. On Pilot 2, I tried to torture you with the Spectrum version of this. Now, imagine the words to the song on the screen and a nice little bouncy orange arrow bounce into the words when you should sing them. I suppose the coders just found a couple of extra bytes free and they thought, well, let's do a little karaoke version of the song. Quite interesting. The Amstrad's version is a lot better, because it's more karaoke singable, and the little arrow's better animated in my opinion. Anyway, the ingenuity of coders also extends to the remix community. There isn't many people who've been remixing music for the Amstrad. Maybe for the ZX128, which is another computer that uses the AY chip. I'll introduce you to that if I'm popular enough to do a series. But anyway, apparently Arkanoid 3 was on the Amstrad. I didn't know this. Arkanoid, if you didn't know, is like a Breakout clone with power-ups as well. I've never really liked Breakout, to be honest. It's a case that you get rid of all the blocks and then there's one left and you can just never reach it. You're having to keep bouncing ever longer, and if you've got a time limit, you're just going to lose. Kangaroo, some remix dude in Germany, decided to do the music for Arkanoid 3 in a new funky whizzy style. Let's listen to it. Thank you. lovely. Just a quick junction onto the next one. Anyone who listened to Pilot 2 would know of Trantor the Last Stormtrooper, done by David Whittaker. Well, here's another David Whittaker Trantor the Last Stormtrooper, but done on the CPC. And a lot better than that grindy, grindy version. PCs, they don't die, they don't crash. It's just thinking. Give it a moment. Give it a moment. Aren't that bad at all. I'm sure if you know your 8 and 16-bit music, you'll know that this is Golden Axe. Yep, they crammed such a big game into so tiny an amount of space, 64 kilobytes. A lot of tape loading between levels, let me tell you. Right, another point to make. Games like the Amstrad, the ZX, the Commodore, they're often the starting point for many genres which are popular today. Two good examples is the Beat Anything That Moves. That would be Shockwave Rider, which was a game where you would have to travel through a travelator, you know what that means, around a city, beating up thugs as you went along, otherwise they would behead you. Yes, this game gathered a lot of controversy in its time. Rob Hubbard, play me out. We'll be right back. on, it's the Cozzers! I think I got away just in time. Oh yeah, another Rob Hubbard supreme piece of music is Saboteur 2. Imagine Metal Gear Solid, the stealth-em-up. Rainbow Six, the stealth-em-up. Well, Saboteur 2 was the original, and was a lot harder to complete as well. It'd be around this bit by now that you'd be falling down from midair about two or three screens onto the top of a building. And if you screw it up, you lost half your energy. Ha ha! Good old Hob Hubbard there, sorry, Rob Hubbard, coding both of those wonderful tracks. And yes, it's suddenly gone quiet again. I just want to explain to you that if you haven't tried it by now, on the next track, I dare you to just sort of turn the balance knob a little bit to the left, and then a little bit to the right. You'll find out that the two tracks are actually different. So, what's happening there? Well, unlike the other two machines, and even though it was just square waves and it was just engineers making all these chips and no music was put into mind here, they did actually put forward some ingenious thing called stereo. Yes, the three channels, you had A, which was dedicated to the left, B, which was dedicated to the right, and C, which was somewhat dedicated to both of them, 50-50. I think you'd call that 2.1. Hee hee. That was Barbarian, another game which sort of held a lot of controversy in its time. I mean, this was one-on-one battle action. You could decapitate your enemy. Yummy. Not also that, all the ladies were portrayed as skimpy-topped babes, and the actual cover of the game itself didn't help matters neither. What with Michael Van Wyck, known as Wolf from Gladiators, and the incredibly busty Maria Whittaker posing away. Actually, Maria Whittaker, if you've got a bit of a lateral thinking mind, I've checked around. I don't think it's a relation to David Whittaker, who you heard earlier on. Shush, 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 shush. We'll keep it stum for now. I don't want to know. One tip I will give you, though. Unless you've got safe search turned on, please don't look up Maria Whittaker on Google. Please don't. Of course, have a look at it. Have a look at it if you're some rampant heterosexual. Sorry.
next song.
Looks like it's still thinking again. Let's take an ad break.
On main viewer now, Captain. It appears to have dual control battles. Plus, it's powered by ROM cartridge. Scan reveals lifelike picture. Plus, stereo sound. Captain, where did that thing come from?
The GX4000 games console from Amstrad at £99. Where else could it come from?
The Commodore Amiga, the Atari ST, the Mega Drive, the SNES, all released at the same time. Amstrad were a bit forward-thinking. A good example of this is the fact that they saw the 16-bit market, the Amiga, the Atari ST getting quite popular. So they thought, we've got the CPC here, let's improve on it. And they still made an 8-bit machine, but they improved upon it quite a lot. They allowed a MIDI interface, there were some expansion capabilities, hardware sprites were much better. You could get 4,096 colours, even though you still had a limit of 16 at the same time. A few more little Z80 chip pokery jiggery thingies. Better graphics, a bit better sound, but still using the same chip. It was called the Plus Range, and it didn't go down very well. And the pinnacle of that didn't go down very well was the GX4000 console. Atari's idea of trying to put an 8-bit console onto the market several years too late. Don't worry, Commodore did the same mistake with the C64 GS. Ha ha ha. So blame can be shared. Anyway, hear this? It's prehistoric. Nice little game done in the early 90s. When they made the sequel, Prehistoric 2 in 93, the Plus was available, so they thought, let's do a bog standard CPC version, and on the side, let's do the Plus version with its improved sound capability. Now apparently the improved sound is called DMA limiting, DMA sound and DMA interrupts, blah 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 blah. All I know is just that it sounds a bit more realistic. Listen to this guitar grindy stuff. Hang on, they didn't have guitars in the Stone Age. They didn't have drums in the Stone Age. What's going on? Ah, they did have bones.
Blinky blink 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 blink.
But sadly, the Plus didn't catch on, and the CPC sort of slowly died until around 1993, when the companies stopped producing games. Oh well. However, the Amstrad had a very good innings. I mean, it lasted a year longer than the Spectrum did, and I would say it outlasted the Commodore, but only just by the breadth of a hair. It was a very popular machine, and it's still popular today, but only to a niche audience. The flagship magazine Amstrad Action lasted until the middle of 1995, which I would say is pretty good. So let's get rid of that spitting image music, put something better on. That's better. Well, this is the part of the show where I say bye-bye, but first of all, I just need to give you the little credits. I'm GGU Draco. This was recorded using the help of Project AY and some French website, which I'll give away on the show notes. Audacity and a very temperamental Audigy 2 sound card helped make this. This is the final pilot, and I am going to leave you off with two wonderful tracks. One of them is the introduction to a popular demo called Demo is Art. And the second one is the good old Tim Follin and his hat, with a nice bit of music to just leave us off. It's Agent X2, the Mad Prof's back. Bye.
The following track was made possible by Tim Follin and his magical hat. We'd like to thank you very much for staying up this late to listen. If you are interested in further information or any future podcasts, you are encouraged to email the author at podcast, that's PhD-CAHST, at podomatic.com. If you cannot do this, but wish to express your interest in other means, you could become a fan of the podcast, or contact the author using his various instant messaging protocols. Regardless, downloading this podcast will actually ensure that this series will continue. And with a slight hint of tiredness in my breath, I would like to wish all of you a very good morning, afternoon, or night, wherever you are.
Shutdown sequence.